The following audio is from North Life Church in Fort McMurray, Alberta. More information is available at northlifechurch.ca.
I didn't realize or know that this Toronto piece would be accompanying this weekend as well, so that's just an added bonus for me. So nationally, there's 500 churches like ours from coast to coast, which is absolutely incredible. I was in Toronto a few weekends ago for some national meetings with all of us as regional directors and our president, Steve Jones, and it's just it's inspiring to hear and see what God is doing through all of us as churches together. And just an extension as regional director to you, thank you so much for investing in this way. It's humbling and means a lot. I'm excited about what God is going to do through you as you minister in our community here this week coming up. So thank you for taking the time to be here with us today and this week. Fellowship Prairies, just our tagline below, encounter God, equip God's people, and just to engage with God's world around us. That's really what we're all about. Strategically as well, this purpose statement, encounter and equip and engage, those are kind of our three flagship events from year to year. Encounter is a prayer retreat for all of our pastors within our region to get together in Canmore for a weekend together. And so this is basically for Pastor Asa particularly, and Pastor Mark, who I know isn't here this weekend, he's at a wedding. We recharge as pastors and wives, and we get together in just a really good environment and setting. The schedule is intentionally fairly relaxed. There's a lot of downtime. But when we are together, we bring in a speaker. This past year, we brought in Sam Rayner. That's one of Tom Rayner's sons. And he ministered to us, and it was a gift that just really encouraged the hearts of our pastors and their wives. The year before that, Mark Buchanan, he's an author of many Christian books. He was our keynote, and so hopefully in about a week's time, I will know of whether or not there's a yes for who we're anticipating this upcoming year. But so pray with me. I'd be excited if it works into his schedule for our next speaker to come along with us. Equip is basically our regional annual meeting, is really the way of saying it. So it sounds really boring, but it's actually a great time. We get together and go over the business, and with that, we see God's favor and his faithfulness to us, and we get a chance as churches to map out and see what God has entrusted to us and laid out for us in our future. And so it's actually a literal equipping time as well. We get together in breakout sessions and just map out what God does have before us and take some time to plan things out as well. Engage is basically a little bit more fluid. That's something that we basically just partner in on from year to year as a conference comes up that we think might be good for all of our churches. We just send that message out to them and as many as can come out to that. So that's a little bit about our region. Our region covers Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and the Northwest Territories. So it's daunting geographically, but what helps me out and keeps me sane a little bit is I've got a couple great guys who work alongside me, and as well, there's 28 churches spread out throughout that region. So it's just my prayer that number continues to grow, and there's some promise on that. So I'm thankful for what God's doing in our midst and looking forward to the days ahead. Here's just a couple pictures. As you know, Canada celebrated its 150th birthday not too recently. There's a picture of a dinosaur with a number 150 on it. This picture's from Drumheller. And one of our churches there, what's cool is their youth group went into the city. And if you've never been to Drumheller, it's crazy. They've got they've got dinosaurs everywhere, like throughout the city. So this would be an example of just a street corner where there's some dinosaurs. So they painted them for Canada's 150th birthday. So our fellowship church in Drumheller painted the blue one, and it has fireworks on it. And what ended up happening was a committee from the city of Drumheller noted that, and on social media took this picture and thanked our church's youth group publicly through social media for the good job that they had done. And so, I don't know, I just took note of that, and I was pretty encouraged. It sounds maybe like something that doesn't really mean a lot, but, you know, to paint a dinosaur in a city, but it's really cool for me that our church was willing to engage and rub shoulders with the community in that way, and that the community responded. This meant a lot to them. And for me, that was just, it encouraged my heart. Anytime I come across a story where you guys are doing what you're doing, and you as a church get that. You have a culture where you understand the importance of reaching into your community and ministering to people outside of these four walls. So way to go, North Life, and just to let you know that that's something that's going on around us as well. Here's a picture of your church. And I came across this from our Edmonton church, one of our Edmonton churches that was here doing what the Toronto church is doing this week. And that just encouraged my heart, that there's other groups, other churches who are hearing what you're up to, and they're excited, and they want to partner in on that and come alongside and help you in that. So that was something that encouraged my heart when I came across that. This morning, I'm going to basically just preach a message from James chapter 4. And we're not going to look at the whole chapter. You'll find, as I do, that the first 12 chapters are full enough. And we'll take on the first four, sorry, chapter 4, first 12 verses are full enough. So we'll look at those first 12 verses and just see what God has for us in that. But this comes out of a series that I was asked to engage in my home church back in Edmonton. And so I was... It worked out for me schedule-wise to have this passage of Scripture, and I thought that I would pass it along and share it with you here this morning as a way of an encouragement. And so just before we do that, I wanted us to bow before the Lord and just ask Him to go before us as we consider James chapter 4 this morning. Father, I thank You for Your love for us, for Your goodness to us, for the fact that You are in our midst and You are working. And God, we're humbled and touched by the fact that You would find us worthy of being able to partner in on that with You. Partnering in on something far greater and beyond us, and something that gives us meaning and purpose in life that far exceeds anything else that we could pursue on our own. And so God, thank You for pursuing us, for chasing us down, for finding us worthy, for giving us permission and the opportunity and making it possible for us to grow up in You. And so, Father, as we commit to that in our time together now, would You just go before us and help us to be attentive to the words that You have spoken to us. And so, Father, we offer ourselves to these moments now as we study James chapter 4, verses 1 through 12 together. And just ask this on our collective behalf and pray it in Your name. Amen. So James, what I love about this book is that it's really straight ahead, and it's very simple to understand. And so if you're in the room today and you're not really sure about God, and this is something that's just totally new to you, and you're just maybe investigating it, but you want to do that from a distance, James is a cool book for that. It's something where even if you have no spiritual background at all, if you just objectively read these five chapters, you would look at that and just as a human being, you could read those words and say, you know what, that actually makes a lot of sense. That's really practical. That's great advice. So you can do that as someone who has no understanding about God at all. And so the book's really cool in that way. And really, it's a microcosm of who God is. You know, His just pursuing Him or finding out about Him, it's something a little kid could do. And yet as you do that, you find out that God is so amazing and so big that in our lifetime, we will never fully understand or be able to grasp His greatness and how deep and wide and amazing He is. And so that's also true of the book of James. I find myself reading it and kicking myself ongoingly. It's like, man, this just makes so much sense. It's so simple. Why is it so hard to just live this way every day, right? So that even if you've been a seasoned Christian for years, you can still take the simplicity of this message and see it and say, man, that's hard. You know, I need God in order to pull this off. And so that's what I love about James. That's what I love about God. You know, He makes it easy enough for us to engage with Him. He's come down to our level, and yet it takes His help for us to reach up to His. It's all God. So we'll find that, I believe, as we look at James chapter 4 again here this morning, verses 1 through 12. It's pretty daunting in that regard. So wherever you're at spiritually, just hear these words, and we'll break it down into a few different sections and read it and see what God has to say to us. The first segment is this, verses 1 through 6. Really what James lays out for us is this. Hey, you know, it boils down to two things. You're either a friend of God's or you're a friend of the world's. When all is said and done, and you're waking up, you're rolling out of bed, and you're living your day, and you go to bed at night, like that's kind of, those are the two options for you. You're either pursuing hard after God, or you've been distracted and you're loving the world. And so we'll find out how he articulates that in six verses. James starts out by asking, what's causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you do ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure. And so James here too, like he's like, he sniffs out where our headspace automatically goes. You know, we read this verse and we say, you know, the end of verse 2, really? All I got to do is ask God and he'll give me everything I want? And then he's like, no, like your motivation is so flawed. You know, your motives are wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure. We want to serve ourselves. Yeah, you know, that's our default setting as humanity. And so verse 4 is a pretty strong word, you adulterers. You know, he tells us we're sleeping around. We're cheating on God. Don't you realize that friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God? I say it again, if you want to be a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. And so it's not just friendship in terms like, you know, hey man, how's it going? Like you kind of know your neighbor, but you don't really know him enough to like maybe even know his name. Like but you're friendly, they seem nice. You know, they don't keep you up at 3 a.m. They're pretty good neighbors. Like it's that they're friends. It's on a deeper level than that. It's friendship in the deepest sense. It's a oneness. It's a marriage type of relationship. It's the highest form of loyalty and love. That you can experience. That's the definition of friend here as it's understood in this passage and context. Verse 5, do you think the scriptures have no meaning? And they say that God is passionate, that the spirit he has placed within us should be faithful to him. Okay, so when you follow Christ, when you say, yes, I want a friendship with you, he places his Holy Spirit within you. He's dwelling in us right now as followers of Christ. And that's significant. That matters to him. He's passionate about it because he loves us. He gave himself fully and completely to us. And he wants that reciprocated. And here's the great thing. Verse 6, because that seems overwhelming. And again, I look at myself and I go, uh-oh, I haven't been a good friend all the time, you know? And so verse 6 is really nice. He gives grace generously. And as the scriptures say, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. And so if I just come in a posture of saying, God, I'm sorry, and in humility realize that I failed you, he's gracious and he forgives us and he picks us up and he helps us to grow. And so that's the first portion of this chapter that we really need to consider. Where are we with God? Are we a friend of his or are we a friend of the world's? And we have to assess that for ourselves. And why can't we all be friends, right? Maybe you look at it and say, well, you know, can I kind of say that I follow God and come to church every once in a while, but then do my own thing from Monday to Saturday? You know, can that work? Can we be friends with everybody? Why can't we all get along? You know, again, just view this more like a marriage. There's only one. And our loyalties and in our heart can't be divided. We have to pursue God with all that we are. Speaking of friends and marriage, maybe it's kind of a scenario like this. And thankfully, I don't have many instances of this, but I can think of just one relationship where I was really close to a buddy of mine in high school and college, and then he met this girl who became his wife. It sounds so horrible to say out loud, but I don't like her as much as my friend. And so just kind of, and for obvious reasons, you know, he picked her over me in terms of like friendship scale. And so just that changed our relationship, right? Like that changed my friendship with him. We don't hang out as much anymore just because it's not the same as it used to be. And so that, you know, that's maybe just kind of a funny example, but maybe you've had that too, where just friendships shift a little bit for us, you know, from time to time. And there's just this kind of natural division that takes place. It's kind of, you know, he's all in with his wife, understandably. That makes sense. And you know, when we pursue God and when we connect with him, the relationship changes. Just some things, maybe some people, maybe some things we used to do or we're close to or involved in, that switches up. The relationship's different now. And we're all in with God. And that's a good example. Like that's a good partnership. And it's a great partnership for my friend too. She's awesome. She's just different than me. So the analogy breaks down that way a little bit, but you know, God in a tight-knit relationship with him affects things around us. It has to. And that happens in our lives. Now, here's what happens. We read these six verses, and I ask you to reflect. Are you close to God today? Are you a friend of his or a friend of the world's? And here's what can happen. We can be here this morning, and we could be maybe just bursting on the inside and saying, just wanting to put our hands up and say, yeah, I'm really close to God. I'm amazing. Like spiritually, everything's like, you know, 10 out of 10. I'm great, you know? And ironically, we can feel really good about that. When we're close to God, we can find it really easy to be judgmental of others around us who maybe aren't measuring up spiritually the way we are, quote unquote. And actually, what ends up happening when we're doing that, verse 6 just told us to be humble. The exact opposite happens, doesn't it? We get full of pride. And we start to measure everybody else's spirituality towards ours. And we're saying, well, you know, that person's failing in this area, so I'm better than them. And the irony in that is that actually pushes us further away from God. It keeps us apart from him. So we're to evaluate it and assess it for ourselves. I came across this quote, and this will be a little bit of a tell for you. This was something I just saw on social media, and it reads like this: the argument that unity is more important than truth and love more important than right doctrine is wrong to the core. And so when I come across statements like this online, I just cringe and I die on the inside, because they're really, so this banner bothers me a lot. Here's why. The argument that unity is more important than truth. And then the author of this, who I blacked out on the bottom, you know, to say that is wrong to the core. Well, it's not wrong to the core. I understand what the person's trying to get at here. If we strive for unity and hold that up as a greater value than, say, like biblical truth, then that's something that's wrong. So there's elements of that I understand, but to say that it's wrong to the core, to me, is just too legalistic and dogmatic and black and white of a statement. Because unity is important, and unity is truth. Right? So it's kind of like, so that statement to say it's wrong to the core, it conflicts itself. And so when a non-Christian sees this, they just look at that and say, well, that's kind of weird. And so that doesn't compute for them, right? And love more important than right doctrine. And here again, I understand what they're saying. We can't, quote unquote, love to the extent of ignoring sin. You know, the loving thing is to correct one another or help each other out. But here they've made it about right doctrine instead of biblical truth, so I struggle with that a little bit. It's not important that you have the right doctrine, because what is the right doctrine? In some regards, there's open interpretation for some of that, or some flexibility, I believe, within the framework of what is actual biblical truth. So love more important than right doctrine. When I look at that, like, And again, just with the standard of the statement being it's wrong to the core, I look at that and I say, well, you know what? Love is right doctrine. That right? So that again, this messaging conflicts with itself. Like God says, love God, love others. Those are the two and greatest commandments. So that is right doctrine. And so I just look at statements like that and I'm like, man, that turns away anybody who's interested in trying to pursue God. I look at that and that messaging for me is just someone saying, I am more spiritual and righteous than you. And I think that the Lord, you know, just looks at that and says, that's not how I want to go about it. You know, there's just a better way to do that. And so I look at my heart and my life, and this is just a complete reveal to you guys. I have to guard against being judgmental of those who are judgmental. You know, so like I see a statement like that online, and I'm like, ugh, you know, and I get worked up, and which is judgmental of me, right? So that's kind of the irony. I have to look at myself and say, man, I just got to release that and know that Jesus loves them too, even though they just approach it in a bit of a different way than I do. And so I guess in that's my point. When we look at each other and start assessing who's doing their spiritual journey the quote-unquote right way, we just get bogged down and bothered and upset with each other, and you know, we get discouraged or we get sidetracked. Maybe it causes us to go to the other extreme and we soften on some things that we shouldn't, and we're repelled by, you know, a spirituality that's not attractive to us, and we're focused on that instead of actually on God. And we just have to have a balance there. And so the main messaging, I believe, in these first six verses is this: just focus on yourself. You know, you assess you. Don't assess others around you. You just need to ask, am I a friend of God? Yes or no? And so this passage, verses 1 through 12, we'll get around to this. It ends with basically James saying, don't be judgmental. And so we'll come to that. And it ties in, goes full circle to these six verses. That's the reason why we're not supposed to be judgmental. Because friend of God, friend of the world, that's between us and the Holy Spirit that dwells within us to decide on and to factor into and make sure that we're in right standing. And so you know you, and God knows you better than you know yourself. So just between the two of you, you're great. Like if you come before God and earnestly say, God, am I your friend? Yes or no? Can you help me in my relationship with you? You're going to do really well spiritually. If that's your heart, if you come to him in humility and in that posture, you'll be good. Okay, so you assess you. You ask yourself that today. And what I find as I do that and I make that reflection, I find this statement to be true in my life, that I can't cling to the cross until I stop embracing some other things. You know, and if I'm holding on to those other things, you know, that's what causes the fights and the quarrels among us. We're just, you know, you're a lover of God or a lover of money. That's really kind of the breakdown. It's God or the world, and it's the pursuit of other things or it's the pursuit of God. You know, which of the two is it for us? And so we just really have to come to terms with that. We have to let some other things go if we're going to truly embrace God and just cling to the cross. So instead of fighting, we need to just take on faith and evaluate where we're at. Instead of causing conflict, just be content. You know, be content with what the Lord has blessed you with. And I realize I come before you here this morning, and I just feel that experientially, I probably just need to sit down and be quiet here. you as a community have just gone through this experientially on a level that I don't fully understand. You know what it is to have things taken from you and to be content in what really truly matters. And so it's just my prayer that God would, through this past year, have you clinging to him maybe in fresh ways and new ways as other stuff has burned up, and that you would see him more clearly through what you have been through, to be content in him. And God gives grace generously, and so we should as well. He's been gracious to us. Even in the midst of trial and difficulty, he's still a good God. And so we need to be too. And that leads us to the next verses, verses 7 through 10. And what causes us to be gracious? Well, it's humility, right? And if I'm proud, or if I think I deserve to be treated a certain way, and here's the standard of you guys all better treat me right or else, I'm going to be in trouble, right? And so when I'm more gracious or have a posture of humility, if I'm treated wrong, I shrug it off. You know, I'm able to just bob and weave with the injustices of other individuals or my circumstances. And humility just helps me to extend grace to others. Philippians chapter 2 is a beautiful passage where God humbled himself. He became obedient to God on a level where he gave up heaven and came here for us. It's undeserved. And he was treated horribly by you and I. You know, he took on humility so that we could be elevated a little higher than the angels. It's crazy to process the humility that God displayed for us. And so we need to do that as well. That posture needs to be ours. Humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come close to God and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Okay, a tie-in again to the first six verses we just read. Let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. And so verse 9 sounds a little weird, and we'll unpackage that in a moment's time. And then here too, again, verse 10, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor. So verse 7, humble yourself before God. And the best way to do that, I found, is just to model after Christ. You know, what, God, not my will be done, but yours. You know, I've got this plan. I've got this agenda for my life. I want to do this. And that path kind of by default setting in me and my human nature leads towards friendship with the world. But I'm going to lay that down, and I'm going to say, God, how do I connect with you more readily? How do I know you more? How do I love you better today than I did yesterday? And that takes humility to do that. And so we need that posture before the Lord. Otherwise, it's our wills. And that's rebellion. It's why Satan was cast out of heaven. You know, he's in heaven saying, in Isaiah chapter 43, we come across, or 14, verses 13 and 14, we come across this. He's, you know, Satan saying, you know what, I'm not really sure I want to pursue God. I'm going to become God and actually greater than him. Who's with me? And, you know, God spoke to them and said, well, okay, for all of you, you're cast out. You know, it's me or it's something different than me. It's rebellion. Verse 8, draw near to God. And here's the beautiful thing. God can't get any closer to us. He offers us salvation. He loves us in fullness and holiness and in perfection. Okay, so God's as close to us as possible. And so what happens to be closer to God, it takes the extension on our part to recognize that he's offered that up and for us to receive that gift and respond to him. So we need to draw near to God. It requires us getting close to him, just, again, assessing and evaluating for ourselves, what's my relationship with God like today? And so how do we do that? How do we get close to God? And that's what it talks about here in verses 8 and 9. Wash your hands, you sinners. And so in red behind that in brackets, I just put, you know, so if you want to be close to God, stop sinning. Purify your hearts. Keep your thought life pure. Okay, because what we start to think about, we act on. Right, so it starts with our thoughts and our hearts, right? That's why it says keep your hearts pure. Because what's in our hearts spills out, we act on that. What we believe in, what we think, it's what we act on. So keep your thought life pure. Jumping down to verse 9, let there be sorrow and deep grief. The tears are what you've done. Feel remorse for your sin. And I was really struck by this. And as I was preparing that back in my church in Edmonton, and the thoughts just came back to me again, even as I reflected on this morning. You know what? When's the last time I had a prayer time where I was moved to tears before God and just felt remorse to the level of just, being moved to being bothered by it or crying about it and saying, God, I'm really sorry for what I did. And I'm ashamed / embarrassed to say it even now. Like, it's been a while where I've taken some time and carved it away and reflected on the depravity and fallenness of who I am to a level or a point of just being so bothered that I'm crying out to God, forgive me, I'm really sorry for just being such a loser in this area of my life. You know, like, it's, we need to do that. I just come before God in humility and acknowledge our brokenness and our fallenness and feel remorse for our sin. Let there be sadness instead of laughter, gloom instead of joy. Don't make a joke out of sin or take it lightly. Don't shrug it off and say, it's no big deal. I can still follow God and still be involved in this. Take sin seriously. It separates us from God. Verse 10 again is beautiful, and it brings us to this. It takes humility to take on that posture. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and when we do that, He will forgive us. He'll say to you, now, thanks for being a friend in return. I will lift you up. So instead of rebelling against God, submit to God. Verses 11 and 12, and again, I had touched on this and alluded to it. This brings us back to that judgmental piece. Verses 11 and 12 say this: don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize and judge each other, then you're criticizing and judging God's law. But your job is to obey the law, not to judge whether it applies to you. God alone who gave the law is the judge. He alone has the power to save or to destroy. So what right do you have to judge your neighbor? Okay, so again, I touched on that in verses 1 to 6, and here it is, just, it's bookended really beautifully here in these two verses by James. And it brings up and it reveals two problems that we have in our lives when we end up being judgmental. And I find this, slander and gossip are often the natural byproducts of us being judgmental. Okay, and so how that happens or how it's displayed, we correct other individuals. And again, when we don't focus on ourselves and just evaluating and judging us before the Lord, when we try to assess one another, our correction of the sins of others is our justification for this sin in our lives. And so we shrug it off. We probably don't even recognize it or see it, but we go and we tell the story of someone else who isn't tracking spiritually, and that's slander and it's gossip. And we're harming somebody else as we bring up our concern to another brother or sister in the Lord and put someone else down. And so it's wrong, it's judgmental, and it's no better than whatever they're involved in. And so that's the harm, that's the damage once we just get into that spiral. And then we just expand and elaborate the story, right? Because it's their side and it's our side. And so we want to make sure that everyone understands our side and believes it and sees it as the righteous thing. So, we slander, we gossip, we expand on the devastation of the bad side, quote unquote. And the Bible just speaks to slander and gossip as something that just tears us apart. It breaks down unity. It separates us. It doesn't have us loving God or one another. And I think these are just a couple of sins in the church that we don't even acknowledge them. It's so easy for us, again, just to naturally get caught up in that culture where we don't even recognize that it's sin. We actually think it's godliness and holiness. Hey, I'm putting this other person down, with slander and gossip, and I'm seeing that as a godly thing to be involved in right now. I'm correcting them. Well, no, you're not. You're talking to others about it instead of just going to them in concern and just one-on-one dealing, just going about it in a Matthew 18 way. And we have to be really careful. Again, it takes humility to do all of that. Not to have a spiritual pride that puffs us up and thinks, I'm better than them, and we're looking down on on this person or this group of people. So we have to be careful in this area of our lives. So there's a couple problems here that where we see that fleshed out, really. Doing this breaks the law of loving God and others as ourselves. Again, I touched on that. I bring it up here again. So if we knowingly sin, if we're deliberate about it, we're breaking God's laws, you know, then we've set ourselves above the law. Really, in essence, what we're saying at that point, it's like, well, God, I know that you've got a law and you've got standards and you're God and all, but I'm just going to take a moment now and criticize that and say that I don't really care about your rules or your laws, and I'm going to see myself and set myself above them. So thanks a lot, God, for trying. I'm just going to make my own law and my own set of spirituality, and I'm going to go about it this way right now. Right? That's what we're doing. It's not a humble posture before God. We're criticizing and judging his law. If we're willingly and knowingly sinning, we've set ourselves above it. So the solution, verse 11, is this: obey the law. Just obey God. That's our job. Obey the law. Do not judge whether or not it applies to you. It does. It does. You know, so just obey it. Don't try to justify or explain away why you're doing what you're doing. Just follow God. Problem number two, we end up playing God. Okay, and I've hinted towards that already here in some of my thoughts on this point. It's God alone who gave the law. He's the judge. He alone has the power to save or destroy. So what right do you or I have to judge our neighbor, to judge one another? We need to let God be God. And so again, that's where the beauty of us just focusing on us is really, really helpful. And I mean, I know that if I do that, that's more than enough. Like if I just trying to keep myself straight is more than enough effort and work, right? That's all I need to do. Just put my energies in towards making sure that I'm right before God. That's it. And just let God be God in my life. Let him judge me. Let him assess me. Let him correct me and guide me and move me closer to him. That's the best way to go about it. And so as we conclude this morning, really it comes down to these three sentences in relation to these three points. You know, be a friend of God's instead of a friend of the world's, verses 1 through 6. 7 through 10, be humble. Take on that posture of humility and just come before the Lord and just focus on him. You know, and then just let God be God. Leave the judging to him. And that's when we're just in the best space imaginable. Bow with me in a word of prayer. Father, I just thank you so much for your word, for James chapter 4. Again, as we look on these 12 verses, they're heavy hitting, and they can crush us in many ways. We fail in these areas time and again, and I would just pray, God, that even in the midst of that and in the weight of that here this morning, that you would come alongside us and just reassure us of your goodness to us. Verse 6, you are gracious, and you will lift us up, and you will draw us near to you if we just take on the humility and just acknowledge the ways in which we fail on this and just come before you and offer ourselves to you again in newness of life and in freshness of this journey. So, Father, I would just pray that you would help us today to be a friend of yours. And Lord, again, maybe even just in a time and a season where we see so much of what's been around us just stripped away. God, I would just pray that we would find you. And God, even in Edmonton, even from afar, I look at what's happened in Fort Mac and I marvel. The messaging is even here in terms of just the culture here, of just a real strong resiliency and a fight and a willingness to stand up and just get right back at it and not be knocked down by what nature's thrown their way, quote unquote. And Lord, it's something to marvel at, and it's impressive, and yet at the same time, Lord, I just pray that before you as a church culture and as individuals, for your people here at North Life, they wouldn't be swept up in even just the messaging of the self-made man and the hard work culture and the let's get back at it. But Lord, that even in the midst of that, there would be a humility of recognizing that a lot of the brokenness needs to be restored by what's God made. And so I would pray for that for this community, that somehow through this trial, they would have their hearts softened towards you. And God, it's a unique window that's probably only here for a shortened season. We just pray for a sensitivity, God, for this church to continue to be salt and light in what has been decimated around them. And God, would you just give wisdom to the leadership here, to everyone in the room here today, just to show people around them some things that are God-made as they rebuild their lives. God, for those in the room who need that, they've known you, they know of that, but maybe just in their lives, the fires have been a bit of a distraction from a closeness and a nearness to you. And I find in my life, God, when there's those circumstances that are beyond me, and it's God-sized, really at that point I wrestle with going one of two ways, a direction of faith and complete dependence on you, or fear and wanting to try to redouble my efforts to rebuild my life around me and manage it. It's hard to release ourselves fully and completely to you. Interestingly enough, when we need to the most. And so I would just pray for the hearts of your church here specifically today. Help them just to see you as friend in a fresh way in these days and in the days and months and years ahead. So much so, God, that would just be noticed in the community around them, and that people would be drawn to what's different when they see us as friends of God. And so, Lord, that'll take a humility for us just to pursue you, to get rid of sin in our lives, to chase you down instead of chasing down, rebuilding our worlds or our lives in our way. And God, we just offer ourselves to you in newness. And Father, just help us to also then in turn have the humility not to be judgmental, just to really be content in assessing ourselves before you. And God, you are so gracious, and you'll be good enough just to say to us, hey, you know what, you can be a bit more of a friend in this arena of your life, and I can help you with that. And so, Father, today we bow before you and just offer ourselves to you in that way. May we leave here today friends of yours. And so, God, for those in the room here this morning, too, where that's maybe just a completely foreign concept, they've never taken a pattern of living for you at all, but they've heard your words today through James chapter 4, and again, the paradox of the simplicity of that message, and yet what seems to be something that's impossible to do on their own, it's just really stirring them. I pray that they will chase you down, that they will talk to a friend that brought them here, or touch base with someone who's a pastor here or a leader here or just another friend, and that they'll just have the courage to look into what a friendship with you means. And so just help them in that, God. Let them know that you're there for them, and help them to pursue you in fullness. And so go with us all, God, I pray. May these words that you've offered to us just really sink in. May we love you, may we be humble, and may we just be free of judgment. Just allow you to lead our lives. We offer ourselves to that process again here today and pray this all in your name. Amen.